A legal education means you will learn to speak in a new language. You will be taught to achieve insight into the world around you and to sharply question what you know.
You can't handle the truth!
What are you doing, detective? What are you doing talking to my client without me present? You sneaky Pete.
Lose? I don't lose. I win. I win. I'm a lawyer. That's my job. That's what I do.
Okay, Comedians at Law fans, this is episode 45 of the Comedians at Law podcast. I am Alex Barnett. I'm joined by Kevin Israel. Hey, Kevin.
What's going on, Alex? How are you? How are we doing?
We're good. We're good. We're very excited to be here. You and me, we haven't teamed up in a while.
I know. It's like Batman and Robin back together.
Something like that, or peanut butter and jelly, I was thinking of more aptly.
Okay. In either case, I'm Batman and peanut butter.
Oh, that's, I think, well, you could be Batman. You could be the Batman of urban legend who's, you know, got like those porno parties he goes to. But the notion that you could be peanut butter, I think, is a disputable one. In any event, this is episode 45 of our podcast. We're very excited to be here talking to everybody. We've got a bunch of stuff coming up. Most notably, we have a show August 10th, Saturday night.
Where will we be?
What's that?
Where are we going
to
be?
Well, I'm about to tell you. August 10th at 9 p.m., we're going to be at Poconuts Comedy Club in the Poconos, which is as people know, is a big ski area, but also is a big summer tourist destination. And I will tell everyone the exact address. We're going to be at the Poconuts Comedy Club on 2092 Pennsylvania Route 611 in Swiftwater, Pennsylvania. The phone number over there is 570-839-3230. Tickets are on sale already. They're on the Poconuts Comedy Club website at poconutscomedy.com. And I know you're excited to play there.
I've been there before. It's a great club. It gets a very interesting crowd of people because they got the vacationers and they got the locals and it's got a cool little feel. It's a beautiful room, so it's going to be a great show.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're really excited because we've got obviously a big audience from Central and Western Jersey who'll probably come out or be on vacation coming out. There's a local bar association there. Local community and just tourists. So I think we're going to see a great show. And if people haven't bought their tickets already, they ought to go ahead and do so now.
It's you, me, Joan Weisblatt, and Julie Katakis.
That's right. That's right. So we're the four of us are going to have a great time. And many thanks to Tom Riccobono, the booker of Poconuts, for having us.
Good old Tom. Is he going to be there?
Yes, he will be. So nice. We'll look forward to seeing him and saying hello. Anything else you're doing that next week that you want to quickly promote or say something about?
I'm actually competing this weekend. So while of the taping, I'm going to be competing at the Cape May Comedy Festival. And I think that's the only big public thing I have coming up. I have a bunch of private shows for different fundraisers and stuff, but I think that's the one big public thing. But by the time you folks have heard of this, hear this, I will already be done with the Cape May Comedy Festival, so hopefully I will. It will have gone well.
Great. Yeah, much luck with that, and I will be at Dangerfields next week on Wednesday night, the 31st, the end of July. So if people are in town in New York City and want to see me perform, you can come see me there. Show starts at 8:30. I'll be on early in the show around 9 o'clock. The other thing that's really exciting about this episode is we have a very, very special interview guest. This is a huge get for us. People should stick around. This guy is a television judge, very well known, so people should stick around. But I tell you what, why don't we cut to the news first, and we'll come back and get to the interview second. So here we go with the news.
But since when has the paragon of investigative journalism allowed lawyers to determine the news content?
All right, Kev, we got some really interesting news stories this week, and I'm going to let you start it off. The biggest one, the most noteworthy.
Yeah, you know what? There's a lot of crazy things going on. I don't know if it's the time of year or the moon, but listen, I wish that I could say that I was a mature political onlooker who's able to observe things and consider them in an adult fashion, but I'm not. So the fact that you have a guy named Wiener running for mayor in New York, that's hysterical to me. And it really appeals to my 12-year-old side. But the fact that this that Anthony Weiner is having the issues he has, just, I mean, you can't make, if this was in a movie and you had a sex addict named Weiner, you would just say that's fiction, that's beyond fiction.
Right.
But it's true. It's happening in your state. This guy could be the mayor of your city, Alex.
That's right. Well, for the two people out there who don't know what's going on, Anthony Weiner is a former U.S. congressman from New York City, from Brooklyn and Queens, who had to resign about, what, a year and a half, 2 years ago now?
It's about 2 years ago.
Yeah, because he had been accused of and actually did sext pictures and tweet pictures of his naked penis to women all over the country and engaged in this repeatedly. And first denied it, claimed that his Twitter account had been hacked, and then he came clean and said, no, in fact, that was me. I did that. And, I mean, they were pretty, you know, lowbrow things. So he resigns. And he says he's going to go get sex addict rehab and all this business. Comes back 2 years later, decides to run for mayor, and most people were willing to forgive and forget and say, well, he's rehabilitated. And all of a sudden it comes out that, in fact, he never stopped doing this stuff, that for a year after he left office, he was still sexting and Twittering pictures of his penis.
Why stop? Why stop?
Right. He's so good at it. Why should he deprive the world of his talents?
But wait. You're leaving out the best part of the story.
Well,
what was the name he was doing this all under?
So I was getting to that. So he was using – because he didn't want to get caught again, he was using a separate Twitter handle name, Carlos Danger.
Because Tony Weiner isn't enough. He's got to go by Carlos Danger.
Right. Now, what's interesting is, separate apart from the story, which is interesting in and of itself, Slate Magazine online came up with a name calculator or generator so that you could type in your name and it would spit out a Carlos Danger-esque name of your own. So I did this. And my Anthony Weiner Twitter penis Twittering handle is Diego Smash.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I wish I had known about this beforehand, because I would have done it too.
Right.
But that's fantastic. So wait, it was Diego Smash?
Yeah. Now, I had thought of some of my own that were more apropos of my personality. Such as Antonio Anxiety, James Frantic, and William Neuroses. But
if you knew Alex at all, those are incredibly apropos.
Right. But I think you should. Well, I'll get you the info. You should type in your name into the generator and see what comes up. But so now, with the for those again who haven't kept up with this, what's happened is his wife, who at the time this first came out was pregnant, has already given birth, and they had a press conference where she appeared and did the whole good wife thing again, saying, well, he's, you know, everyone's human, blah, blah, blah. And her name is Huma.
Now, interestingly, who did she work for?
She used to work for Hillary Clinton. And, of course,
it's like a little sorority.
Right, of good wives standing by their man who are sexual deviants.
Who can't keep their penises in their pants. By the way, wait, quick, look, breaking news. My Carlos Danger name would be, and this is better than yours, Fernando Trouble.
I like it.
That's fantastic.
You're right. Fernando is an excellent name.
Oh man, that's great. Hey, let me ask you something though, seriously, and I mean that, and I don't want to mock addictions, because listen, there's nothing funny about substance abuse, addiction. Gambling addiction. I know that's all real. It's very serious. And a lot of millions and millions of people suffer from it. But do you really believe that there's a sex addiction?
I think sex addict is another name for man.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
That's my personal
I remember when I was, 14 or 15 and the idea of having sex was such a faraway fantasy that I thought I couldn't possibly think about this anymore.
Right.
And so was I clinically at that point a sex addict? No, I was 14 or 15. This guy doesn't have an addiction. He's just, excuse me, an asshole.
Well, I don't know about that, but clearly he has a fondness or weakness for this behavior, which in and of itself is whatever. I mean, I'm not going to cast.
Anyway, so you're telling me he can't control himself.
No. I'm saying well, I have no idea. I'm saying it's his activity, it's his hobby, it's whatever you want to do. And frankly, if it's not breaking the law, then honestly, I don't really care. Except, and there's one exception, which is the fact that he lied about it once, failed to disclose it again. So now what's coming – now this is the legal discussion, because it's raising the question of whether or not this guy makes for a trustworthy legal – you know, public official. You know, does this somehow impact upon his ability to carry out the duties of the mayor of the city of New York, which frankly is probably the second most visible public office in this country after president.
See, and I agree with you to a point, but I think, look, the guy – I mean, first of all, it shows a level of intelligence or a lack of a level of intelligence. We're living in 2013 with everything that goes on in the news. We know, and we've actually talked about this on the podcast before. If you take a picture of it, if you take a picture of yourself, whatever you're doing, if I took a picture of you right now,
right,
of your little head on my screen right now, it could end up anywhere.
That's right.
It's, you know that. You know that anything you put online, anything you text or tweet or Facebook, it's gonna go. There's endless possibilities of how they could Photoshop your head into a walrus's body having sex with a cheetah, and suddenly there you are, and you'll be forever known as the walrus who banged the cheetah guy.
Right.
And he should. He's a smart man. He was in Congress. He's an educated, intelligent man who should have said, I am taking a picture of my penis now and sending it through text. This could really end up anywhere.
Right. Well, you're right. He should have, and he didn't, and I don't know why he didn't. And I also – no one seems to understand why his wife is standing by him now. The first time around, okay, you could see she's really very traditional family values. She thinks people should be forgiven, et cetera, and so forth. But the
Alex,
second
– I know you're the nice guy. Here, you're the nice guy, and I'm the bastard.
All right, let's hear.
But you've told lies in your life, right? As a kid, did you ever lie to your parents?
No, never.
Okay, that's a lie, right there. But did you ever get lost in a lie, or start to tell a story and then you realized you were so far in you couldn't possibly back out, and you just had to keep going? I think that's where Wiener's wife is. I think she has gotten herself caught so far into this that she realizes if she backs out now, she's going to look terrible. But if she looks like the dedicated wife who's willing to defend her husband, I think she thinks it's going to save face for her.
Well, that's one view. The cynical view is that she's as power hungry as he is, if not more so, and she's standing by him because she figures if this guy gets elected, she's going to have they're going to roll out the red carpet for her for the rest of her life. Which is possible. I mean, she's a smart woman. She's very ambitious. So who knows?
Listen, the simple fact is if you spend enough time rubbing elbows with Hillary Clinton, two things are going to happen. You're going to become incredibly power hungry, and you're going to get horrible cankles.
Well, I think we have to move on from the story, but let's leave. I think we should leave a parting thing. This one is such a big story that
It's the gift that keeps giving.
We have to make this the Twitter challenge for next week. We want people to tweet to us. Well, you could ask whether he should get in and out of the mayor's race, which is too bland. I think we should have people tweet to us their favorite, their own Carlos Danger name generator.
Yes, I love it. I love it. If you're listening to us, and I'm not going to get into my rant about Twittering yet, but if you're listening to us and you tweet at us what your Carlos Danger name would be, we'll send you a T-shirt.
Right, and let's tell them where they get it. So it's at slate.com, right?
Yes, it's slate.com. Just look for the Carlos Danger name generator.
Right.
At slate.com, you can just do a Google search. Just do what I did. I did slate and wiener generator, and it came up.
There you go.
Tweet us a name, hashtag CalPod, and we'll send you a T-shirt. How easy? You get a free T-shirt.
There you go. Let's move on to the second story, and why don't you set this up for us? This deals with this Florida boycott coming out of the Trayvon Martin and George Zimmerman case.
Yeah, now Alex, I want to try to keep the eye on the ball here, because I could see us getting a little bit lost in our political diversity here and probably how we feel about everything. But as in the aftermath of the Zimmerman verdict, that he was found innocent of manslaughter.
Well, he wasn't found innocent.
No, not innocent of manslaughter. Sorry. Murder.
He was found not guilty.
Not guilty. Different. Right. A number of very notable names in the entertainment industry have come out in their brilliance to boycott Florida until they revoke the controversial Stand Your Ground law.
Right.
Now, I would like to caveat this with what I think is the most important thing, that the defense didn't even use the Stand Your Ground defense. So I don't know if these celebrities are just idiots, but if you had a problem with the Stand Your Ground law before, then you should have been boycotting it this whole time. But it shouldn't be because of this case, because the defense never even used that defense. So,
well, I think that's oversimplifying. I mean, I think what this case did, regardless of your view on it, I mean, my personal view is that the ultimate verdict was wrong. But, you know, I think the notion is this case highlighted this particular law and highlighted the fact that it, depending on your view of guns and the law, that it really provides an unfair defense to people who probably or often could be in the wrong. In other words, if your view is that Zimmerman created this situation and then used Stand Your Ground in a unfair way, you would want to boycott it. Now, I happen to agree with that view. I'm sure there's some people, particularly the legislators in Florida, who disagree with me, but that's the view.
I don't listen. I don't look. I don't disagree that Zimmerman was guilty of killing Trayvon Martin. I think the verdict was right for the charge that he was being tried for. I don't think it was fair. I don't think it was necessarily justice, but I think it was the way our legal system works. As far as this, the Stand Your Ground issue, I don't know. I'm always mixed when it comes to guns and the whole issue, because I'm not a gun person. I've never been into guns. I'm not a big fan of guns, but at the same time, I am a Republican bordering on libertarian, and I don't think people should be told what to do in that sense. This is a tough one for me.
Here's one thing I didn't understand, not to diverge too far again from the story we're talking about, which is the boycott. But what I never understood in the Martin Zimmerman case, the Zimmerman trial, was why the prosecutors didn't think about the fact that this was going to be a close call and then add in a charge for aggravated assault. Because I think, you know, it was pretty clear they weren't going to get second-degree murder, homicide. It was possible they were going to get him for manslaughter. But they should have, I think, seen the fact that manslaughter might not fly, so we should have an aggravated assault charge. Because there's no way he gets out of aggravated assault, because he assaulted the guy with a weapon.
And now, you know what? You're right. If we were in law school and we were looking at this case as a simple fact pattern, and what would you do if you were the DA? But I think the truth is, and the politics behind this. Look, they weren't even initially, I think, planning on charging him with anything. And a lot of that, the decision to charge him and what they charge him with came out of a lot of the PR pressure after the fact. Now, I'm not saying they weren't. I don't want to say that they weren't going to charge him, but I don't think they knew that they were going to charge him for murder. I think a lot of this was rushed by political pressure and by public pressure to charge him for murder, and I think they just made a hasty bad decision. I agree. They should have tried him for manslaughter. They should have charged him with manslaughter and tried him for that, and probably would have been found guilty.
Well, no, they did ultimately charge him with manslaughter, and it didn't stick. But I'm saying they should have had an aggravated assault charge. And anyway, let's get back to the boycott, because here's the issue. Now all these celebrities, I think Stevie Wonder, Alicia Keys, some others, are talking that they're going to boycott Florida until this law gets changed.
Jay-Z, Justin Timberlake.
Yeah. Are you going to boycott Florida?
I'm not going to boycott. I was born in Florida.
I know, but are you going to boycott it? You have a vested interest. It's your birthplace.
No, I think this is absolutely ridiculous.
Are you going to go to Florida?
Yeah. I mean, if some clubs in Florida want to book me, I will gladly come down there and take advantage of your economy. But I think that first of all, these entertainers, so they're gonna make an entire populace of people who didn't make these laws suffer and miss out on the beautiful crooning of Stevie Wonder for the lyrical masterwork of Jay-Z, where the I don't know whatever Justin Timberlake does, the falsetto, the sounding like you got kicked in the nuts singing of Justin Timberlake.
Well, I don't know what Justin Timberlake does either, because I frankly can't understand why he's so famous. But
see, he just is. We should take a page out of the Justin Timberlake handbook. But whatever, their logic is, oh, so all our fans in Florida are going to suffer because your state made bad laws, and that's gonna make a statement. But what the article that we have in front of us highlights Ted Nugent, who was a rock star and also a very vocal conservative, and I would go for it to say almost a gun rights nut.
Yeah.
But he spoke out against these celebrities who are boycotting Florida. And I'll read you a quick snippet of his quote.
Yeah.
He said, "You gotta be kidding me. So 700 black people, mostly children, young people, were slaughtered in Chicago last year by black people and not a peep out of Stevie Wonder. Are you kidding me? What is this? One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest? How brain dead do you have to be? How strangled by denial? How dishonest?"
Well,
and then he
goes on. Right. Now, of course, this is a typical sort of right-wing conservative arguments tactic, which is to draw false parallels. You know, like I saw an article where some conservative outlet was drawing a parallel between the Trayvon Martin George Zimmerman issue and now some white businessman or something who was beaten up by a black teenager, and they're saying, "Well, where's the outcry over that?"
Well, no. See, I'll agree that's a false parallel, and you're kind of juking and moving, but. But I do see where Nugent is coming from. Where is all the outcry when, you know, all the black murders and the black on black violence and the deaths, which are almost countless? The Department of Justice can't keep track due to some of the areas and the inability to report. So where is all that? Where's that vehement call by these celebrities against that?
Well, I think they're different issues because I say Nugent, while making a point, is drawing false parallels. The difference is that in the Trayvon Martin George Zimmerman issue, the issue is you have an unfair what these celebrities see as an unfair law that led to this scenario where a white man profiled a black teenager, created a situation, and then fell back on this unjust law as a way to defend himself and get out of basically a homicide charge. Now, I think the separate issue is, well, look, 700 black youth children or 700 black people are killed in Chicago because of gun violence. That's a huge issue, and yes, it does bear people paying attention to it, but I think they are. I think the problem is you can't say.
That's where I think your argument falls off the tracks. I don't think anybody's paying attention to it.
I disagree with you. There was
That's a number that we should all know and have ingrained in our heads. That many people of one group of people are being murdered by each other in our country, almost without any law behind them is insane. The fact that you're going to spend weeks and weeks and weeks focusing on a crime look at a law that where you could say there was one murder and it was horrible, and I'm not taking away the value. One life isn't worth more than another, but they're going to the media and the frenzy over this. But meanwhile, you have this entire other situation that's creating an entire almost epidemic problem in society, and nobody's saying boo about it.
That's not true. That's not true, because the NAACP is saying stuff about it. The people on MSNBC are saying stuff about it. The Brady Center for Gun to End Gun Violence is saying stuff about it. Celebrities who are involved in those causes are saying something. But that issue is about gun control and gun safety and preventative measures about gun violence, which the NRA works very hard to drown out with its own lobbying efforts. What this thing is about, the celebrity boycott of Florida, is about is just that, which is boycotting a state to take a stand and say this law they have on the books is unfair and unjust and leads to bad results. So I think Nugent is being disingenuous. I mean, I frankly don't believe that he's concerned whatsoever about black people in Chicago or elsewhere. But even to the extent he is, he should be at least genuine enough to say to make these as two separate issues.
Are you suggesting that Ted Nugent doesn't care about the average black man?
I would say that that's probably right. I would say, but I don't know. I mean, for all I know, Ted Nugent loves black people, but I have a hard time believing it. I think Ted Nugent cares about Ted Nugent, And I think Ted Nugent is, you know, really excited about the NRA. I know one black person he doesn't like, and that's Barack Obama. You know.
Okay, well, why don't we end there? Because that's just we're just going to snowball into an entire different thing. But we're not even going to ask for tweets on this.
No.
I apologize for how serious this got. Alex and I stand on extreme opposite ends of the argument here. But the fact is, this is going to be an ongoing debate. It's obviously there's going to be a lot of pressure put on Florida over the next couple months, but I think nothing's going to come of it, and life's going to go back to the way it was.
I will say one sort of, I don't want to say glib, but lighthearted thing about this, which is, given our respective financial conditions, Kevin and I, neither one of us are boycotting Florida, and in fact, the comedians at law are not boycotting Florida. We will be happy to be booked by anybody or any institution, particularly law schools, bar associations, or law firms that want to book us to perform down there.
Yes. So if you're concerned about a shortage of entertainers due to this boycott, don't worry. Comedians at Law is here to make you happy.
Right. All right, Kev, let's move to our third story this week. This is out of the celebrity pages, and why don't you tee it up for us?
This one really strikes close to me because I always had a mini crush on this girl in some of her early roles. I thought she was very cute. She seemed to be like the American sweetheart kind of girl. But as we all know, if you didn't know about the Trayvon Martin situation and you didn't know about Anthony Weiner, you probably do know that Amanda Bynes has completely lost her friggin' mind. Amanda Bynes has spent a good portion of the past, I'd say, 5 to 6 months just in an epic downturn, just a collapse of personality and celebrity. That I don't know that it's been matched before by anybody. And it now has gotten to the point, and she insisted that she wasn't going crazy. She was tweeting crazy stuff. She was getting plastic surgery. She was calling everybody ugly. She called the president and his wife ugly. She was talking about having sex with people and not having sex. The police came to her apartment. She supposedly threw a bong out the window and then claimed that some of the cops hit her in her vagina. Which I just liked being able to say that, but it's true. She said that.
But let's cut to the issue. So the issue now is that her parents are going to court, right?
Yes, she apparently it's finally gotten to the point where she's getting psychiatric help. I think she's been admitted somewhere where she's receiving therapy, and now her parents are looking to step in.
Right. So she's on a 72-hour psychiatric hold, and her parents are going to court Friday morning, which is, you know, literally hours from when we're taping this, to ask for a conservatorship over her financial and personal affairs. Meanwhile, people are saying that, just as you've described, that she is, quote, frantic and discombobulated, which I like saying almost as much as you like saying vagina.
Yeah. Well, I just like saying she claims she was hit in the vagina.
Here's my issue. Look. Obviously, people love when celebrities run amok and come unspooled because it makes for prurient television. Have you ever been frantic and discombobulated?
I've usually been incredibly drunk.
All right. But, I mean, like, people get frantic and discombobulated all the time. I don't think they need a court-ordered conservatorship over their stuff. Do you?
Alex, do you follow Amanda Bynes on Twitter?
I do not.
I do.
Okay, you're actually a follower of hers.
Oh yeah, because it's just awesome, and she is certifiably insane. And yeah. If she's not insane, if this isn't legitimate, then she is pulling the greatest wool over the public eyes, and is just she's a marketing genius that Andy Kaufman would probably bow down to, because she has created such an insane sensation around herself. With her actions and her statements on Twitter and other social media.
So I went to her Twitter page now as you're talking, and her tweets are very terse. Her last one.
That's the first thing that jumps out at you, really? That they're terse?
Well, I'm looking at one that says, Drake is gorgeous.
Yes, well, apparently she was sleeping with Drake. Listen, I've been following this very closely. She was apparently sleeping with Drake and then not sleeping with Drake, and she called Drake ugly a number of times. And then she said he wasn't ugly. I'm sure Drake hasn't lost any sleep over this. But Drake was a big focal point of her a lot of her rantings.
I like this other one, which says my life has changed for the better ever since I changed to lowercase font.
That's actually kind of funny. I mean, that's actually kind of funny. Maybe she should try some stand up. But the legal point here that you were asking is that should her parents be able to step in just because she's acting nutty?
Yeah.
And you always hear these stories, even MC Hammer and, you know, guys, Vanilla Ice and their boxers out there who had all this money and they made some terrible decisions and they ended up losing it all. And now I don't know how much money she has. She was in a couple of big movies. She had a thing on Disney. But she probably has some kind of wealth. And it would be really sad just to see her go, for whatever reason, she had this snap, and then she's going to lose everything. So I think a good family will step in and try to do the right thing by their child.
All right. Okay. I mean, look,
you're a parent. You know this better than me. You wouldn't want to step in for Ivan and say, hey.
I of course would, but I know, like, for myself, I've had episodes or days when I've snapped my cap, and I wouldn't want people to just take over my stuff just because I was acting like a clown.
Alex, listen, I've been around you when you snap your cap, and and I don't even think that's a saying.
It is.
But this wasn't a couple days. This has been about going on a year.
Okay.
And she had legal run-ins. She had run-ins with the law. She's clearly doing drugs, and not that I'm saying that the fact that she had a bong and some weed is indicative of anything, but when the cops come to your house and you have issues, there's a lot going on here. When you're willing to take it to that, I'm sure you've listen. When you snap your cap, so to speak, I say in air quotes, the cops don't come to your house.
No, that's true. That's true. Okay, so all right, so let's leave it there.
Judge Alex, she let her relative.
I previewed the next bit too quickly, so let's leave the news there and let's go to the interview now. All right, Kev, and I apologize for that, for the audio visual glitch there. I was getting really excited about our interview this week. Our own Matt Ritter, Doc Hollywood, you know, a mover and a shaker, was able to land us a phenomenal guest.
Big fish. He got us a big fish this time.
He got us a huge fish. It's none other than Judge Alex from television. And let's go to that interview now that Matt Ritter conducted with Judge Alex.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have a very special guest on the podcast this week. You may recognize him from his hit television show, Judge Alex. We have on the podcast, Judge Alex Ferrer. How you doing, Alex?
Good, good, thank you.
So I wanted to jump right in because you were a Florida judge, and we just had a big case coming out of Florida. I wanted to get your take on the Trayvon Martin verdict. Do you think it was the right verdict? You know, if it wasn't the right verdict, whose fault was it?
Well, the George Zimmerman trial, I guess, because he was the one on trial, not Trayvon.
Yes, the George Zimmerman, yes. You know, the media has gotten me thinking Trayvon.
Yeah, because it's a very tragic case. I mean, you have to feel for the family. They lost a 17-year-old son. It's a horrible fact pattern. He was unarmed on his way home from the store. Zimmerman apparently mistook him for a burglar who's been committing a lot of burglaries in the neighborhood, and then they had an altercation, and Trayvon ended up dead. So it's a very tragic case. I think that's why the media focuses on the victim so much in this case, is they usually focus on the defendant's name. But, you know, the verdict from a legal standpoint is purely a legal standpoint, not an emotional standpoint, was the right verdict. The jury did what we asked jurors to do, which is follow the law. And in following the law, they found that there wasn't sufficient evidence, at least that's what seems clear from the verdict, to overcome the defendant's claim of self-defense. And that looked like it was a problem in the case from the beginning. I think every legal analyst who looked at the case, I'd say reputable legal analysts, because there are a lot of people out there who didn't even watch the trial who are giving comments now and are getting all the facts wrong and everything. But, from the beginning said, this is crazy. The prosecution does not have the evidence it needs to overcome the defendant's claim of self-defense. And by the way, Matt, this happens every day across the country. It doesn't make it any less tragic. It's horrible every time it happens that somebody gets killed and the prosecution says, we don't have enough to go forward. typically do when they don't have the evidence. They look at it and they say, all right, we don't know if it's true or not, but the defendant's claiming self-defense, and we need evidence to overcome that, and we don't have it. And that happens very often when you have only two sides of the story, and one side of the story is dead.
Yeah, to me, that seems a little, you know, just unfair in and of itself, the fact that the only witness in a lot of these cases is the person that did the shooting. Now, what about these lesser charges that would have been available or could have been available? I mean, is there not a charge?
Well, he was charged with second-degree murder. The lesser charge of that was manslaughter. But self-defense is a defense to all of them, whether it was second-degree murder or manslaughter or battery. It doesn't matter. Self-defense is a defense to all of them. It basically means the person, the jury, believe the defendant's claim that he was in fear of either death or serious bodily injury. And they found that under the circumstances that he found himself in, that fear was a reasonable one to have. You know, people say, well, now it's going to become open season and everybody's just going to shoot each other every time they lose a fight. Well, I mean, that's not likely to happen because, number one, you get put on trial like George Zimmerman did. Number two, if a jury finds that your claim of self-defense is not reasonable, then you get convicted and you go to prison probably for the rest of your life. It's not 30 years or so. So I don't think that's what's going to come of this. The sad part is that it's still a 17-year-old boy who's not doing anything wrong, who's killed. And that tragedy, there's nothing you can do about that. But from a legal standpoint, as far as, you know, our system requires the prosecution to prove its case beyond every reasonable doubt and to disprove, in Florida, to disprove self-defense beyond every reasonable doubt. And the reason we have that high standard is because we want to make sure that people who are not guilty do not get accidentally convicted. So we forced the prosecution to meet a very high burden. But not saying burden is required across the whole country. Self-defense might be a little different across the whole country, but in reality, there's a lot made about the Stand Your Ground law in Florida, and it really did not come into play in this case at all. So I think the standard that would have been applied in pretty much almost every one of the 50 states, except I think Louisiana, would have been the same.
Well, I wanted to ask you about that, because there seems to be a little bit of confusion about Stand Your Ground and sort of self-defense in general. It seems to me, I read an interesting article, it was a Penn Law professor, about how self-defense in Florida and New York and a couple of other states is slightly different in that as long as your belief was reasonable, you're acquitted. It's an all-or-nothing proposition, whereas in other states, if your belief was reasonable but ends up being wrong, you end up still with some sort of lesser charge and you still go away to jail for something.
Right. Well, let me give you an example of that, which I've used a few times. If you wake up in the middle of the night and you hear somebody breaking into your house or coming through your window or something, you go into the living room and you see somebody climbing in through your living room window and you shoot and kill them, you would be right under self-defense law. You would be right to use deadly force in Florida and in most other states because, first of all, you were afraid of serious bodily injury or death when somebody's breaking into your house in the middle of the night. Secondly, the fear would be viewed as reasonable under the circumstances. Now, if it turns out that the person coming in through the window is your neighbor's son because your daughter called them and said, hey, why don't you come over? I left the window open, climb in and I'm in my room or whatever. Well, you're no less at fault. You still were under a reasonable fear of serious death or serious bodily injury. Under those circumstances, you were wrong. It wasn't somebody who was going to hurt you. It was the neighbor's kid, and he was unarmed, and you don't even have a scratch on you. But in most states, you would be found not guilty because it was a fear that you had a fear, and the fear was reasonable. So the law typically looks at the situation the person finds themselves in. What made this case ugly is that Zimmerman put himself in that situation. He wasn't sitting in the room.
He followed him. He profiled him.
Yeah. Well, profiled in the sense, I don't think it was racial profiling. I mean, I think that's a suggestion that's made when you use the term profiling. And I think the prosecution used that term specifically because they wanted to suggest to the jury that it was racial profiling. But they stood out there and said, this is not a race case. that is because, despite everything the media said about George Zimmerman being a racist and all this stuff, and in fact there was a major network that actually edited the tape of his call to the police in such a way that it made it sound like he was a racist.
Yeah, that was horrible. That was really horrible.
Yeah. So there was I think they contributed in large part to that perception that he was a racist as the prosecution looked into it and the FBI came in and started investigating it for the feds and issued a report saying this was not racially motivated. They found a lot of things about George Zimmerman other than him being a racist. They found that he grew up with two African Americans in his home. He mentored African American children. He took an African American girl to the prom. He went out and lambasted the Sanford Police Department in front of the county commission because one of the sons of a police officer was alleged to have beaten up a black homeless man. He went out and fundraised for that black homeless man to raise money for him. I mean, he came off as anything but a racist. So I think the prosecution couldn't claim that he was a racist. What happened was in that neighborhood that had a lot of burglaries, and the burglaries have been committed by teenage black males. So he sees a teenage black male walking between the homes at night in the rain and thinks, I wonder if this is one of the burglars. There's a difference between somebody fitting a description of someone who's committing a crime and somebody who sees any black male and says, oh, that guy must be no good, he's black.
Right.
That was clearly not Zimmerman.
Right.
So as far as the racial animus, that profiling, I think he profiled him as a burglar.
Right, but I guess my question is there some sort of miscarriage of justice when you make a mistake that leads to somebody else's death? Right, I mean, ultimately, had he not gotten out of the car with a gun after the cop said no, I mean, is there sort of a loophole sort of in our laws that need to be fixed is what I'm asking.
I don't think so, and the reason is because any time you close a loophole like that, and it's not really a loophole, it's just an interpretation of the law, anytime you close one door, it closes 50 doors. So when you say, oh, you know what, if you're wrong, then it's not self-defense, then you take the focus off of what the person thought at that moment and perceived at that moment. And let's face it, when you are in a situation where you are afraid for your life, you perceive things very differently, and you could very well be wrong. But
right.
It was a real perception when you were afraid for your life. So the situation where you end up shooting somebody who's coming in through your window, that God forbid it turns out to be your son who forgot his key, then you get prosecuted for murdering your own son. The law doesn't look at it that way. The law looks at it and says, what was your state of mind? Did you have a criminal state of mind? Were you trying to do something criminal? Were you trying to do something that was so negligent that we call it gross negligence? Were you acting in self-defense? Did you really perceive that you were in danger? And if you did, was that perception reasonable? If it wasn't reasonable, then tough luck, buddy. You're going to prison. But we leave that up to a jury to decide what is and isn't reasonable under those circumstances.
Right, but again, I guess I go back to him getting out of the car. I mean, isn't there some sort of legal... I mean, shouldn't there be, I guess, what I'm asking is, you know, maybe not just in this specific Zimmerman case, but where you sort of initiated... ultimately, you know, something that led to somebody's death. As in, you know, if Zimmerman never got out of the car, Trayvon Martin would still be alive. So therefore, isn't there some sort of criminal liability that should be imposed?
They could do that. They could change the law across the country. The dispatcher, when he heard that Zimmerman was outside the vehicle, he said, we don't need you to do that. Well, the dispatcher came to court and testified about why he said that. And he said, look, he said, the reason we tell people that we don't need them to follow somebody who they think might be up to no good is because we don't want them to get hurt. The guy could turn out to be a seriously bad criminal and kill the person who's calling us. Or there could be a mistake, or something. But we don't want to be liable. We don't want to be sued because we told them to follow and tell us, you know, what was going on. So the defense attorney was successful in arguing to the jury, hey, look, this guy was getting mixed signals. On the one hand, he was telling them, well, we don't need you to follow him. And on the other hand, he was saying, what's he doing now? What's he doing now? Which implies, well, I want you to follow him. Tell me what he's doing now. And
right.
It seemed like, you know, it seemed like the police department wants to have it both ways.
Right.
He knows where he's going, but we want to be able to say to you, we don't need you to do that in case you get hurt. We're not going to be sued.
Right, I guess what I was going to ask.
It's not a lawful police order in the sense that a many police officers telling you, don't do something, and if you do it, you get arrested for obstruction of justice. Now, they could change that law across the country and say, you know what, if a police dispatcher tells you to do something, it's a police order, and you're required to do it. I don't know if it would be constitutional, but if they did that, then, yeah, you would have been in violation of the law by continuing to follow. But remember, in trial, he claimed he didn't. I don't believe him, but he claimed that he didn't continue to follow, that when the dispatcher told him, we don't need you to do that, he turned around and was going back to the truck because he says he went out to see a stop street sign to give the address of where he was to the police. But I don't necessarily believe that. I think he continued to follow in the sense that he wanted to be able to tell the cops when they arrived, he's over there.
Right.
You know, he's behind that bush or whatever.
I guess I was sort of thinking of, you know, just in the abstract, I'm thinking the flip side of a Good Samaritan law.
Yeah, kind of the opposite of a Good Samaritan law. For your audience, a Good Samaritan law typically says if somebody gets involved in trying to assist you, like you break down on the highway and you know, they try to assist you, or they try to give you CPR, and in doing that, you actually are injured worse. They don't get sued because you put yourself in peril and they tried to rescue you. So this would be the opposite of a Good Samaritan law. Basically, I guess what you're looking for is a law that says if you're trying to assist the police and they tell you back off or stand down or whatever, you continue, now you are violating the police order or something. You know, that's certainly possible. Legislature can pass laws. I don't know if it'd be constitutional for anybody, like a non-sworn officer, like a dispatcher, to do that, but it's certainly possible.
Let me ask you a sort of larger question, because I think, you know, this case sparked a lot of debate about race and, you know, very emotionally charged. Do you think in general, from your experience as a Florida judge, that the system is biased towards, you know, young black males?
I don't think the system is biased. I mean, there are certainly going to be people within the system. You know, there are going to be police officers who are racist, white male and black male. I've worked with both. I've worked with some black male officers who were more racist than white male officers. And I can understand it because I used to get angrier at Hispanic males than my white counterparts did because I'm Hispanic. Mm-hmm. And so when, you know, somebody, you know, another Cuban was acting up and committing crimes, I'd get angrier because my impression, you're making us all look bad, you know? So I understood some of those black officers I worked with who would be angrier at a black defendant than the white cops. So you're going to have racism no matter what. There's racism among whites, there's racism among blacks, there's racism among Hispanics, and some of those people are going to work in the criminal justice system as cops or whatever. You know, luckily I've worked with many judges and I really don't know any who I could say are racist, but I would say statistically there would have to be, just because it's a segment of the population. So, you know, there is going to be some bias, whether it's against black or against white or against Hispanic, based upon whoever's in the system, whoever's in a position in the system and happens to be a racist.
Let me ask you this. So just in terms of the gun call, I just think that, you know, combined with the gun culture we have in America, it sort of creates this powder keg, you know, with whatever self-defense. I mean, do you think the gun laws need to be changed in this country? Do you think that sort of has a pivotal role in all of these cases? It's really about the gun laws? I mean, should George Zimmerman be allowed? I mean, should he be allowed to be walking around with a gun, you know, period? I mean, should he be allowed to be driving around, with a gun in that situation?
Well, I'll say this. When I was a cop, I appreciated the fact that nobody else other than me had a gun, except bad people. It was easy to tell the bad from the good. I could see somebody in a liquor store, he had a bullet under his jacket, pat him down, it was a gun, he was under arrest for carrying a concealed firearm. Made my job a lot easier, and I felt safe because I had a gun, okay? But that's a real selfish viewpoint, because I was fine. Everybody out there wasn't. I was fine.
Right.
So in a time when police response time is so slow, I mean, police are overburdened. They have so many calls. So, you know, you have people on the street who pull a gun on somebody, and, you know, the police aren't going to get there sometimes for 10, 15 minutes. So what are you basically saying to the person who had the gun pulled on them? Sorry, Charlie. Well, tell your family that you know, you did what you could. I can't say that I think that they shouldn't have you know, carry concealed weapon laws. In places where they didn't, like Chicago was the last holdout. I mean, Illinois. Chicago's crime rate was one of the worst in the country, and they had the strictest gun laws in the country. So if strict gun laws meant you were safe, Chicago would be Mayberry RFD, and it wasn't. It was one of the worst. So they just passed carry concealed weapon law, but of course, every state is different. Some, they're very, very limited. The average citizen can't get it. If you're a diamond merchant, maybe, you know, that kind of stuff. But in other states like Florida and other states like that, as long as you don't have a prior felony and you take a course and you show proficiency with a firearm, you can get a carry concealed weapons permit. I don't know the statistics of whether crime rates drop after they pass laws like that or what, but I would be hard pressed to tell people, no, you know, you shouldn't be able to carry a gun when, you know, there's a lot of people who are actually able to save themselves because they were able to carry a gun. And there's always going to be people who use that opportunity incorrectly. You know, they get angry and they draw a gun. But, you know, I there is some merit to the argument that criminals aren't going to care about the law.
Right.
So you can say, no, nobody can carry a gun. Well, the criminals are always going to carry guns.
Right.
It's just the law-abiding citizens who are going to say, oh, darn, I can't carry a gun. So I do see the problem, but I also don't know that is the solution.
Let's move on to your show. You're a judge and you have a TV show where you're trying real cases. How different is that from actual non-televised court cases?
Well, I mean, the difference. I handle real cases. I have the real litigants. We pull them out of courthouses all over the country and invite them to have me resolve their case instead of the judge in California or Texas or Tennessee or New York. So in that respect, it's identical. The difference is I get to speak my mind. You know, when you're a judge on the bench, you have all kinds of rules about expressing yourself. You can be subject to a motion for recusal and things like that. I don't have that problem. I get to express myself. If I think somebody is clearly a thief who has taken advantage of this elderly person or whatever, I have no problem and I have no hesitancy in calling them out and saying, you're a thief. That's what you are. You know, everybody now knows. Whereas as a judge in state court, I would be much more reserved and I would say that, you know, I'd think it, but I wouldn't say it. So I think in that respect, it's a little different.
Is it more fun?
Yeah, it's a lot more fun, of course, because, you know, being able to express yourself and being able to call it out the way you see it is very liberating. You know, that is a great feeling when you see somebody before you who really needs to get their comeuppance and you get to dish it out to them. So I enjoy it. I think the viewers at home feel like they're getting to see justice being done because they're having to see the real feelings of the judge based on what the person did, as opposed to a very sanitized, prosecution has met its
right. Before, you know. Everybody loves a good judicial smackdown, I think.
Well, it's warranted, you know. If it's a judicial smackdown that's not warranted, which sometimes you see from people, then no, that's abusive. But every time I smack somebody down that way, as if they deserve it. That's my feeling.
Did you ever think that you would end up where you are, you know, when you were in law school? Did you ever think, oh, I'm going to end up, you know, being a TV judge, or what was the plan?
No, I can tell you pretty clearly that as you're growing up, people do not, or did not, at least back then, say, one day I want to be a TV judge. No, not something anyone aspired to. And I'm not one to plan my career. I don't, you know, there are people who say, you know what, in 5 years, I'm going to be a, or 6 years, I'm going to be a partner at this law firm, and then in 12 years, I'm going to break out and go on my own, and in 20 years, I'm going to go on the bench and be a judge. I tend to stumble through life. I do things that I like to do and want to do until I no longer want to do them, and then I look for the next opportunity. And the reason that I've been blessed with the ability to do that is because my parents gave me great advice when I became a police officer. I was 19 at the time. I was the youngest cop in Miami. And my dad said, listen, you don't know if you're going to want to do this the rest of your life. Keep studying. Because if you decide to stay with the force, it's not going to something different, you're going to have options because you didn't give up studying. And I saw a lot of cops who worked with me who, you know, kind of got tired of the career, but they really didn't have any options because they hadn't continued studying in any way. So it sounded like good advice, even though I was sure I wanted to be a cop. And I kept studying, and after I got my bachelor's, I said, you know, law school, the law is related to law enforcement, so I like law enforcement. Let me do law school, and I did. And by the time I graduated law school, I was ready to talk to me something different. I still loved police work. I still miss it. I think, you know, it's a noble profession. You know, there are bad cops just like there are bad priests and there are bad teachers, but for the most part, they're good, and they are decent people who, you know, are out there protecting us. So I liked it, but I was ready to try something different because I hadn't quit studying. I had options, and that led me to be a lawyer, a litigator, and eventually to be a judge, and eventually to be a TV judge.
So what's next, Senator Alex? What's on your...
That's funny you say that, because I can't tell you how many people have come up to me and said, oh, you should run for the Senate, or you should be a politician, and that is the last thing in the world I want to do.
That's what every politician says right before they run for office, isn't it?
Yeah, that's true, except I've been saying that since I took the bench, you know, became a judge about 18 years ago. I've lobbied in Tallahassee. I, as the saying goes, I've seen how sausage is made, and I don't want to be a part of the sausage-making factory. There's so much backroom dealing, and it just seems so underhanded to me, and I just don't want to be a part of that. But I've had plenty of people come to me and say, we need to rent you for whatever, the House, the Senate, whatever. And I'm also not somebody who is in love with either party. I mean, there are things that I agree with and things I disagree with in both parties. I could probably say I dislike them equally. So I'm an independent, which would make it difficult to get elected in a lot of places. But it's kind of a dirty feeling business there.
Okay. Before I let you go, I have to ask, how does it feel to be among the ranks of the George Clooney's and the Matt Damon's featured in People Magazine's Sexiest Men Alive?
Yeah, out of place. That's how it feels. Completely out of place. I don't know how that came about. I was actually in New York on business, and my publicist called me, and she was as surprised as I was. She just called me and said, oh, my God. Actually, no, it was in Miami Beach. So I was meeting with John Walsh, who was shooting America's Most Wanted there, and I went by to say hi to him, and she calls me and says, oh, my God, you're in People Magazine, Sexiest Men Edition. And all I could think of was, oh, so this is the week all the editors of People Magazine decided to drop acid.
No, I'm looking at your picture. You're very handsome. You're a very handsome judge.
Well, thank you.
Before I let you off the hook, let our listeners know where they can find you, how they can see you, how they can get in touch with you.
Well, I have a Facebook page at facebook.com/judgealexTV, and I have a Twitter account, which is at Judge Alex Ferrer, Ferrer. And they're welcome to join. I'm commenting on there and responding to some questions. I can't respond to everybody because they get a lot of questions, but I do try to interact with my audience there. So welcome everybody.
Oh, great. Well, I may hit you up with some questions then.
Sounds good.
All right. Well, thank you so much for doing the podcast. I really enjoyed it.
Nice talking to you, man. Take care.
All right. Great. Thanks.
Wow, that was unbelievable. I can't believe we got this guy to be a guest of ours. I think that's fantastic.
Judge Alex, he's an interesting guy. He's got a good story.
Yeah, he does. He does. And I think that was really remarkable. I think now we finished up the interview. And so the last portion of the show is, I think, your personal favorite, which is Good Cop, Bad Cop.
Absolutely.
Look, I'm really sorry about that. I saw how aggressive you were being, and I thought, wow, I got to go even bigger than that since we're doing Bad Cop, Bad Cop.
What? No, I said Good Cop, Bad Cop. I'm the bad cop, you're the good cop.
Okay, then there it is. That's it. I thought you said Bad Cop, Bad Cop.
All right, so this week, Kev, Good Cop, Bad Cop, it's you and me. So as always, I'm the good cop, you're the bad cop. And let's go to the Twitter page and see what's going on.
For the record, last week when I was with Matt, I was the good cop.
How did that even work?
Terrible. I still ended up being the bad cop.
Yeah.
I am, if I'm being the good cop, I'm still the loose cannon.
Yeah, I could see that. So in any event, well, let's say one thing about our Twitter feed. Through the efforts of our own Julie Katakis, we're growing by our followers. The number of our followers is growing enormously.
So, Julie is a Twitter monster.
Yeah, so people should be joining up and following us on Twitter because we really have a lot to say. But I'm looking at the Twitter feed, and I do not see that anybody tweeted CalPod at us this week.
Nope.
And nor do I see that, in fact, anybody really did much of anything in terms of tweeting at us.
Steve Schwartz gave us a little shout-out for something funny that our own Joan Weisblatt did.
Right, but I think, I even as a good cop, I can't give him the T-shirt for that.
No, definitely not.
I think Joan should give him a T-shirt that says, I love Joan on it.
Yes. Well, listen, Joan might get her own following and usurp the power that is Comedians at Law. But we do have a bunch of new followers. We're definitely growing. Florida Lawyer, Hukum Undip, Will Thompson, Maryam Boudal,
Legally Brunette. Yeah, Legally Brunette. You know, some good stuff.
Yeah, we got a bunch of new followers. If your name was just mentioned and you were listening to our podcast and you heard your name and you tweet at us, CalPod, I heard me, or I heard you talk about me, we'll send you a T-shirt.
Yeah, okay, there you go. But I think, in the meantime, the more interesting thing with the Twitter feed this week is next week's challenge, which is everyone's got to send us their Carlos Danger slate-generated name.
Yes.
And the best one, we'll pick the best one, and that person will get the T-shirt.
And yes, and remember, Fernando Trouble wants to hear from you.
Or Diego Smash.
Fernando Trouble and Diego Smash of Comedians at Law.
That's right.
Sounds like gay porn.
It does. Well, so does Carlos Danger, for that matter. Well, Kev, I think we've come to the end of the episode. Anything you want to mention?
This was a great episode. We had a great interview. We talked about some awesome stuff. Once again, you showed how wrong you are on a variety of topics.
Well, I think...
And I always enjoy it.
Yeah. Well, and also, in closing, let's make sure we remind everyone that August 10th at Poconuts in the Poconos...
Coconuts, come on out.
Right. All right, so this week for Comedians at Law, this is Alex Barnett.
This is Kevin Israel.
Thanks so much, everybody.
Take care, guys.